The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And welcome to the Omega Metroid Podcast. My name is Andy Spiteri, joined as always by Dakota Lasky. Dak, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. Nothing really out of the ordinary. I've had a new dog in my life for about a week now, so I've been getting used to that. And other, nice. Yeah, she's great. Her name's Callie. It's my friend's dog, but he's moving into the apartment. So it's my dog now, and she's awesome. She's a husky. She's so cute, but she's sleeping over there. But yeah, other than that, everything's pretty business as usual, and looking forward to talking some more Metroid.
Yeah, speaking of dogs, it is raining cats and dogs here in Calgary, and also we brought over my fiance's parents' dog yesterday to meet my cat, which was really funny. We have videos of the, like, he's this huge German Shepherd. He was only here for about an hour or so, but like, he was fine. He was doing his thing. He's like this big giant goof, and he started to sleep, and my cat was just like, "What the hell is this thing?" And she'd never seen anything that big. So that was really funny. But we're gonna try and get them to become friends somewhere down the line.
Yeah, it's been unsuccessful because we have a cat, and my cat has been like hiding in my other roommate's room for about a week now. Just like has a little pillow fort and just hangs out in there because he leaves a little bit every once in a while, but he is very much afraid of this gentle and soft and sweet doggy, which is funny.
Yeah, that's a cat thing. They're weird like that.
I don't blame them.
But we've got a good episode for you today. We're gonna actually be covering a plethora of different subjects after our deep dive into Federation Force last week. But we're talking about cats. We're talking about dogs. I want to talk about rats. Yeah. Actually, I was just scrolling Facebook like 20 minutes before we started this episode, and I saw a Kickstarter for a game called Curse of the Sea Rats, and it is a new Metroidvania game. It's supposed to be releasing April 2021. Very, very cool aesthetic. It was like, kind of imagine the Great Mouse Detective, like the Disney movie, mm-hmm. that kind of aesthetic, but like everybody's pirates. Mm-hmm. And it just looked really, really cool. It caught my eye. It's on Kickstarter right now, and you know, I'm all about new Metroidvania games. So when I saw this, I was just like, this is pretty cool. So I ended up I did like the free back because they have crushed their backer goals, so I don't think they need more money. But if anyone has any spare change that they want to throw at this game, I thought it looked really cool actually, and maybe it's just because I have a soft spot for Great Mouse Detective, but it really, really reminded me of that. So go check it out over on Kickstarter. I thought it looked pretty neat.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now because you messaged me today with this Curse of the Sea Rats, and I'm like, okay, dude, like, what is this? I have no idea what you're talking about. But I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, they destroyed the goal. The goal was like just under 17K, and it's like they hit like $180,000. Like, that's insane. But it looks pretty cool. The aesthetic is really cool. I'm not like a huge like fan of the whole mouse. I might be a little like traumatized by living in the Bronx and seeing so many rats and mice that I don't know if this game connects with me thematically. But the gameplay looks really cool. I love the art style. And clearly it seems like it's gonna be coming out. So yeah, I'm gonna check that out. It looks pretty cool, and maybe I'll be able to stomp some rats out in the process. In the game.
Yeah, in the game. So that's not the only cool thing that I saw Metroid related this week. I saw a book online that I ended up purchasing. It just came in a couple days ago, and it is called The Anatomy of Metroid Deluxe Edition by Jeremy Parrish. I'm really excited to actually dive into this. Basically, it's an in-depth game design analysis of the first three Metroid games. So Metroid, Return of Samus, and Super Metroid. And there's even a little blurb about Kid Icarus as well. So I got that. That's still up on Amazon if anybody wants to check that out. I'm like really, really looking forward to diving into that. It looks like there's a lot of cool like screenshots and just artwork and stuff like that. So any Metroid fans out there, which I'm assuming everyone listening to this is, this might be a must-buy for you guys. So again, that is The Anatomy of Metroid by Jeremy Parrish, and that's on Amazon right now. So check it out.
I'm going to check it out. Though I want to hear your thoughts before I purchase it, or maybe you can photocopy it to me. I don't know.
Maybe once I'm done reading it, we can maybe do a little bit of a show on it if there's enough meat on that bone there and talk about some of the things that this book suggests.
I was going to say, it sounds like this would be a topic to go over this. I personally would love something like that for like Metroid Prime. That'd be so cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
But having it for the first three games, especially Super Metroid, is really sick. I would like to check that out. And yeah, you pretty much said everything that I would have said if I were in your position. So nice.
So you know what? I actually want to float an idea by you, Dak, because since we've started this podcast, I've been like kind of slowly convincing a lot of my friends to play Metroid, right?
Okay.
And when they ask me, like, what's the first one I should play, usually I'll say Super Metroid. Sometimes I'll say Metroid Prime, but most of the time I'll say Super Metroid. So I have, like, three buddies right now playing Super Metroid for the first time, and all of them are just like, I'm stuck, I don't know where to go. I was almost, like, considering maybe writing a walkthrough of Super Metroid with, like, kind of a detailed, like, a walkthrough slash, like, I don't know, not just like strictly like go from point A to point B, but like something cool, something fun about that. And maybe it's because I've been writing about Zelda for like the last 4 years, but I just like felt like writing about something about Metroid. So I don't know. Do you think you'd be down to read something like that?
Yeah, I feel what they're putting down. You know, sometimes you can get lost in that game, and why not? We should have our own walkthrough from the Omega Metroid podcast.
And that's the beauty of Metroid, too, is getting lost in Metroid as well. So I don't really want to take that away, but like I thought that it would be kind of cool.
I understand these days. People want direction, and maybe this is the kind of direction they need. But yeah, it's not a bad thing to get lost. And just like in Metroid Prime, you get super lost, too, at times. Super Metroid, yeah, some of the magic of the game is getting lost and kind of figuring it out yourself.
Yeah, so anybody out there listening would be down to read a walkthrough about Super Metroid. Let us know at Omega Metroid Pod.
Might be a lot of competition for you though. You know, a lot of walkthroughs out there already.
and when I say walkthrough, I think I just basically mean I would write about Super Metroid because I love Super Metroid, mm-hmm. and like it would happen to be I'm writing about the world and what you can do as you're going. I don't know. I was kicking it around because it's just like I have so many people that are just like, asking me where to go in Super Metroid. I'm like, man, I should just write this all down.
Yeah, why not?
So we'll see. Okay, let's move on and let's talk about a big piece of Metroid Prime 4 news. Seems like a while since we've been able to say that, but here it is. Retro Studios has hired, I'm going to butcher this name, I'm so sorry, Bat Nandakumar, who worked on Call of Duty Black Ops 4. This is a very, very exciting announcement. I'm looking at the roster of talent that Retro Studios has assembled for Metroid Prime 4, and you've just got so many great artists, producers, engineers on this list, people that have worked on incredible projects, both in like the first-person shooter category, the platforming category. Like, you look at the list of names here, and the games on some of the team members' resumes here. We've got people that worked on Battlefield. We've got people that worked on Shadow of the Tomb Raider, Borderlands 3, New Super Lucky's Tale, Donkey Kong, Halo, Crysis. Like, it's stupid the amount of talent that is being assembled to work on Metroid Prime 4. So I'm really excited about this, especially because, I mean, Black Ops really is, you know, it's at the top of the food chain as far as first-person shooters generally go.
Well, that's the thing, is I think it's not just important that, okay, we have someone from Call of Duty, which is really cool, but it's what did this specific developer do in those games? He's been working on, you know, at Activision for a decade and working on every Black Ops installment, apparently. It's not just 4. I think he's been, he most recently was the lead engineer on Black Ops 4, but he's worked on every Black Ops game. And in those roles, he was the one to create the original theater mode in Black Ops, which was the first time Call of Duty had a replay feature, and seems to be involved in terms of Black Ops in online tools and gameplay programming and stuff like that. So when you think, take those in, you know, parts into consideration, now you're thinking, okay, what would Retro want with that kind of programmer or developer on this kind of game? As someone who wants some awesome multiplayer, I'm excited because maybe they are actually going to be putting, you know, some more resources into that this time. Maybe they'll just be involved in like just the gameplay overall, as just a lead engineer, who knows. But I'm excited, like, it's not just someone who's part of like the developer team, but like a veteran, someone who's worked on multiple titles within the same franchise, as someone who like they can clearly rely on. So yeah, I'm excited. So now we're seeing like a bunch of different games being represented in this team, right? You have Call of Duty, Halo, Mirror's Edge, Battlefield 5. You have so many different perspectives and kinds of experience and knowledge bases coming into this game. I'm excited. I'm looking forward to this. And you, and as far as I know, like when a company's hiring, that's usually a good thing. If they're hiring like low, you know, entry level or whatever, low salary workers after like a major cut or whatever, that's not, you know, that would be bad, right? In the case of like, let's say Blizzard, when they had a lot of layoffs, and then maybe they started hiring a few people for those same positions at lower salaries. In this case, Retro's hiring for more people, more positions, with people who have a lot of experience, who have a lot of time, and can bring a lot to the table. So that looks really good. I don't care. I want this game to come out soon, but as far as I'm concerned, they can take their time with it. I'm glad that the team is growing. I'm glad that the team's getting stronger. This makes me more excited and more confident that this game's going to be great, and I can't wait to see what, you know, they have to show off whenever they do show it off. So yeah, this is awesome. This is actually great news. And yeah, I'm really excited to see what we get next.
You know, I feel like with all of the parts kind of seemingly falling into place here, perhaps, you know, maybe I'm just being blindly optimistic, but perhaps it's time that we see a little something about Metroid Prime 4 in the near future. If it's a quick little teaser trailer, if it's just like, frankly, an update saying like, you know, we'll have something for you by like December, we'll have a trailer then. I feel like something is coming for Metroid soon. And I don't know if it's that because of all the rumors about a new 2D Metroid, or if it's just like, you know, we know that Metroid Prime 4 is being assembled from the ground up in the background here. I don't know. I just get that feeling that something is coming soon. Which is very, very exciting.
Yeah, it's just hard to know with like the current state of the world, really. Like, would we be hearing something now normally, right? If, you know, we weren't in the current situation that we're in? Or are we going to have to wait a little longer because the game's still being developed, or because things have been delayed in general? Yeah, I hope we see something soon. I can't wait. Yeah, I do think that we're...
I don't mean to suggest that we're going to see like Prime 4 like releasing soon. Oh, no, just, yeah. I feel like it's time anything. To show people. Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that do we know, like when they want to show something up, I think they're really going to wait until they really have something. Because I don't think they can, like, they could get away with the teaser thing again, but I think they know that when they show Prime 4 again, it really has to bang. Like, it has to be really hype. Yeah. It has to be really good. It has to be, like, on point entirely. So I think they're going to wait until, like, the moment's just right. Like, they know, as much as we, like, you know, kind of... not slander, but, you know, we'll talk about Nintendo in terms of, like, how they treat Metroid marketing-wise and overall as a franchise. I do think they still know, like, the gravity of, like, the Metroid Prime name and the expectation that comes with it. And really everybody does, I think. Even if you don't play Metroid Prime, I still think a lot of people know, like, oh, that's the good stuff, right? So I think with them, like, they know that, like, we really gotta get this right. We really... And even Retro, too. I think on their end, too, I'm sure they really want to, like, knock it out of the park and be like, look at this. We're coming back to this franchise we haven't touched in over a decade, and we're gonna not even miss a beat. We're getting the super team together. We're gonna make the sickest game. Like, that's how... If I were running Retro Studios, that's what I would want to be doing, right? I'd be wanting to make the sickest game possible. Like, we're gonna make sure that they, you know, regret ever having us not work on the Metroid series, right? Even though it was Retro's decision to move on to other games, but still. So yeah, I'm excited. I think this is going to be awesome, and I can't wait to see whatever it is when it comes out, because I think whenever they do show something, it's going to be epic.
Yep, I agree, and I don't know. Maybe this announcement has just got me excited. I feel like there's something in the air. So, you know, I have to admit something to you, Dak. I've never played any Call of Duty game ever. Not even really, multiplayer, man? At a buddy's house.
Dude, like, I mean, just, Call of Duty is like a punching bag game, but Call of Duty can be and is and has been good. Like, Call of Duty 4, like the original Modern Warfare, is one of the best FPS games of all time. Like, Black Ops 2 obviously introduced, like, zombies, really good games. Those are games that, I mean, obviously there are some duds and some not great ones, but it's worth playing the good ones, even for the campaigns. You know, maybe if you don't want to play the multiplayer, that's one thing. But yeah,
I don't know. For a Nintendo gamer like me, I'll take a 2D platformer.
You got to broaden your horizons, man. You know, you got to broaden those horizons. One thing I love about FPS game, just like, it's so immersive, dude. I love being like right in it, like with stuff that isn't first person. Not that it isn't as immersive, but at the same time it kind of isn't. I think, like, I really get the most immersed in first person games, but that's just me.
Well, that's fair enough. Let's move on, and let's finally get to what we are here to talk about today, and that is the trope of using clones or doppelgangers or enemies that are a dark reflection of our hero Samus in the Metroid series, and not just of Samus, but just in general. This was something that we were kind of chatting about, and then we were just like, you know, this would make kind of a cool episode, because Metroid does actually lean into this this trope maybe more than we think. Like, obviously, we all know about the SAX and Dark Samus, but there is a lot of other, you know, there's a lot of other instances where the Metroid series uses this kind of, this evil version of a hero trope as well, and you know, that's what we're here to dive into today. And Dak, this was kind of on your brain, so maybe take us away and tell us about what got you thinking about this.
Yeah, so Andy walks by me in the hallway, and he pushed me against the locker, and he shakes me down and is like, you need to come up with a topic for this episode or I'm taking your lunch money. I was like, all right. Yeah, I thought this was something to think about, because, you know, we're focusing on Federation Force, like, specifically just a single game in our last episode. So I'm thinking about doing something that, you know, kind of goes across multiple games, multiple generations. And yeah, this was kind of like a theme, a trope that does come up pretty often in the Metroid series, not only as, like, in respect to, you know, major antagonists, but just in general. You see it in enemies, you see it in, I mean, you can look at Metroid Prime 2. And there's a whole planet and, like, dimension that is, you know, a mirror of another one, a doppelganger kind of dimension. So it's something that's pretty common in Metroid, but not something that you really always kind of stop and think about. Like, oh yeah, there are kind of a lot of, like, clones and doppelgangers and stuff in the franchise, which I guess makes sense for a sci-fi property. But, you know, I thought something would be cool to talk about. So yeah, I figured we'd jump into this by looking at the different ways this trope has kind of been exemplified and is on display in the series, and kind of going about what we thought about each instance and what we see for the future.
Right. So before we get to the two that everybody wants to talk about as well, let's spend a second just talking about some of the lesser known instances of, like, the fakes or doppelgangers in here. And you brought up a great one, Dak, and you're basically saying, like, what's your favorite, like, non-Samus-esque doppelganger in the series?
Yeah.
And speaking of Super Metroid, I love when you go head-to-head with the Terizo. It's such a, you know, over the course of playing multiple Metroid games, and even though Super Metroid was my first Metroid game, you've just been conditioned to know that those Chozo statues are a good thing, and that they are, you know, you're about to get something great, you're about to be rewarded in some instance. And I kind of love the idea that this kind of flips that on its head, and actually, you got to fight this guy.
Yeah, I thought the Terizo was, like, the best non, like, boss example of this trope, right? Like, the Chozo statue is something that you immediately think, oh, good, that's a respite right there, that's a safe haven for me, I'm getting something, and then that gets turned on its head. Though the enemies are never really, like, the strongest to ever deal with, I always thought it's cool to have this, like, animated, and that's another thing, trope, too, is how, like, Metroid, when it does bring some kind of unique enemy to the fold. A lot of the time they might be like an animated corpse, so they're an animated pile of rocks, like in the example of like Thardis, or they're an animated Chozo statue, right? Which I always think is cool, like how these things kind of come to life that are part of the world in a way, or might not be. Yeah, I think the Terrizo are a great example of this, like the go-to example. I think the Terrizo are really cool. I would love to see like that idea continue and maybe get like stronger versions or bigger versions. Yeah, I thought the, and like, you know, you have your like the golden Terrizo and all that. Yeah, I think that the Terrizo are a really good example of this. And that was this, they were actually what made me think about this idea overall, like, because, you know, like I said, like, and we'll go into this later, the SAX and the Dark Samus examples are pretty obvious, but I was like, what else, like, there are other things. This and the next one, which was one of my favorites, the fake missile tank infusion that shows up, which I think is like so out of place but kind of funny, like a very video gamey kind of thing. Those two things made me think about this topic, and that's why I wanted to pick it.
It actually took me a second to remember where the fake missile tank even came from, because when I was reading it, I was like, where the heck was that? And then I was just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's an obscure, yeah, like, one- or two-time thing in Fusion, and these, like, off, like, they remind- I think this happens in, like, I think they're an enemy, too, like, not the missile tank, but, like, a similar, like, fake enemy in, like, Wario Land 4 on, like, the Game Boy Advance as well, and I'm sure that, and they show up in a bunch of other games, too, like, it's a common trope that shows up in a lot of video games, but it's funny how it's implemented like other video games in Metroid. You know, it's not like a fake Chozo statue or a fake Metroid enemy, it's just a video gamey pickup that is, has, like, bat wings, or whatever, and looks, like, very out of place, and I was like, oh, you know, that's a kind of, I think there's a fake energy tank, too, though I might be misremembering, but yeah. Like, I always like those things. The other one I was thinking of, and maybe you would be a fan of, the mini Kraid that you fight just before, yeah, you take on Kraid.
You know, so I was about to say, like, you know, we were going to talk about some good and bad examples. I think the Terrizo and the fake missile tank are, like, really good examples of this in Metroid. Mm-hmm. And actually, surprisingly, I don't really love Mini Kraid.
Oh, no.
For whatever reason. And I like the enemy Mini Kraid, but it's just like, you're about to fight like actual Kraid, and then you have like the small version of Mini Kraid. So for me, I was just like, you know, he feels lesser than just by default. So it was kind of cool blasting him, but maybe if there were like, maybe if there was more of a reason for those mini Kraids, like if there were, let's say that you discovered like a nest or something like that of Kraid eggs or something like that, right? And these mini Kraids got out, and like that's the reason for them existing, I would actually be really down with that. But it's just, he just kind of shows up randomly, and it's just like, oh, okay, like is this Kraid? You're kind of confused, and then you're just like, no, well that can't be Kraid because it's not behind a boss wall, but like it looks like him, so. This one actually isn't my favorite, despite my love for Kraid and all that. So there's my surprise for you. But yeah, this one I think isn't as well handled as the Terrizo.
Yeah, the implications of the mini Kraid are weird. It's like, okay, are there like so many, like are there multiple Kraids on this planet? Does Kraid like start out small and get really like super huge, or are there full grown small Kraids? Like, was that an adult Kraid that was just another size, or is it a baby Kraid? Yeah, that's, I don't know why they did that. And I also believe that there's like a fake like mini Ridley that wasn't used but is like in the game's code, which makes you wonder like, I wonder if they like maybe got to the mini Ridley part, like, maybe this isn't such a good idea, and by that part it was too late to get rid of mini Kraid. They're like, ah, screw it, just leave him in. We don't have to explain it, but don't use the mini Ridley. I don't know. Yeah, that was always a weird one to me, because at least like the fake missile tank and the fake energy tank have like that video game kind of reason for being there. They're, you know, they, even if they kind of stand out from the rest of the world. But this, the mini Kraid kind of doesn't. Like, why would you have like a miniature version of the same boss that, you know, it doesn't put up much of a threat at all? And lore wise, why would the fake mini Kraid exist at all on the planet nearby the big Kraid? Other than, I guess, it being, like, its offspring or something, which doesn't seem to be applied in any other means otherwise. So, yeah, I don't know. Weird stuff. But, yeah, there are some good instances of this and some not-so-good ones.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. It's just like, it's cool, but like it also is just weird and whatever. You know what it almost feels like is you're fighting the NES version of Kraid before you get to like the SNES version of Kraid.
Maybe it was like a throwback to that, a reference maybe.
That actually, like, maybe. Yeah. That makes sense to me. Maybe that's why they took NES Ridley out of Super Metroid, because he looks ridiculous.
Yeah, maybe.
So, speaking of Ridley, let's talk about him, because there's also a couple clone versions of this guy. Or actually, I guess just one clone version of this guy. Now, Dak, you have Ridley X on your list of
characters. Oh my god, I didn't even
here.
Think about...
But you skipped very specific kind of clone.
I dead ass completely didn't even think about the other M. Ridley clone. I just it completely like blocked out of my mind.
I was gonna say, like, that's probably an instance of cloning or creating a doppelganger in the Metroid series that doesn't exactly work for a variety of reasons. I feel like this trope really works well. And not just in Metroid, but just in, like, games, media in general, when, like, you see a dark image of your hero and, like, what could have happened to this hero if he would have made some slightly different steps in their path in life or something like that. So, like, or kind of a dark reflection of, like, you know, what could have been if certain things hadn't happened or had happened. And for just on that principle alone, I don't think that it works well when, like, you have a villain that has, like, a clone or dark image of himself. And, like, especially the way that Other M went about it with the kind of metamorphosis of the little birdie into Ridley. And now, you know what? I defended this before on the show, and I'll defend it again. I actually don't think that that idea is awful in theory. Because, like, you see it on Alien, too, when, like, the chest burster comes out and like he eventually like evolves into the xenomorph as we know, but Other M just didn't do it very well.
Yeah.
And, like, the design of the birdie going into Metroid or going into Ridley looked really bad. This one is probably the schmozziest version of this trope that we've seen in the Metroid series.
It's so bad. I hate it. So this is the dark side of Ridley. If he like took steroids and went to the gym, because for some reason they decided to make him, like, yoked out of his skull. I maintain that the Federation sucks at what they do, because that's been proven time and time again. And they had a ton of different organisms on that ship within close proximity of each other. What I maintain is that they had Ridley DNA. It got mixed in with some other animal or organism, alien, whatever, species DNA, and created this quote-unquote clone that has this weird life cycle. You know what? I'll maintain that, or I'll argue, okay, like, fine, or concede that, fine, maybe Ridley having, like, this life cycle like a Pokemon isn't the worst thing. I think it's stupid, but if it was executed better, maybe it'd be fine, because, yeah, the xenomorph and alien also has the same thing, and that's fine, and I never really think of that as a negative. So, okay, I'll concede that, but I don't accept that a clone of something looks very different than the thing it's supposed to be a clone of. The thing I liked about we'll get to this, but the thing I like about the Ridley X clone is that all the X clones all look kind of exaggerated. They're all kind of detached a little bit from the original image of what they were, right? They have this kind of corrupted look to them. So when Ridley X looks a little different than the actual Ridley, he has like a bigger, like, he looks like a caricature of himself in that game, a bigger, like, exaggerated head and like the smaller wings and this crazy screech and all that worked for me. It looked really cool. With the other M Ridley, he doesn't look like a Ridley despite being should be scientifically a one-to-one clone, so that's why I think he was mixed in with some other stuff. And then even if he doesn't look like the actual Ridley, he looks stupid. He looks so dumb. Like he's like this big jacked up body and this stupid duck bill, and it's like what are you doing to my boy? Look what they've done to my boy. Like, I hated what they did with him. It's so stupid and awful, and I completely blocked it out of my mind. But I think the trope works still for Ridley, because I agree that, yeah, for like a villain, maybe having this, like, I don't know, when I think of him as a clone, I don't think of him as like a dark side of the, I don't think a clone necessarily has to be like a dark side of like the original image.
Like doppelganger is,
but doppelganger
so like
would be
image,
yeah, but I wouldn't really consider the Ridley clone to be like a doppelganger, whereas like the SAX clone I think is more of like a doppelganger in that kind of way. But in that regard, I think it works kind of for Ridley, because Ridley already has, like, the gimmick of coming back to life, you know? So, like, him having, like, another version of himself that comes back to life and, like, replaces the actual live one, I think for Ridley, thematically, makes sense. It's just, it wasn't executed well. It worked fine with the Ridley X. Like, Other M just ruined that, man. I hate that game and how they did that, but yeah.
Before we get off onto a deep dive about Other M and its sins against Metroid, I will say that
perfect
I actually...
sins.
I do kind of like that it kind of, at least in a backhanded way, explains what Ridley is doing on...
On the BSL and Fusion. Yeah, but did that need to be explained? I'm not asking rhetorically. Do you think that needed to be explained?
You know what? I don't think it did. Like, when I was playing, I was never just like, what's Ridley doing here?
That's, like, part of the mystery of the game, you know? It's like, ooh, like, the Federation, like, Ridley's dead. How does the Federation have his body? I thought I completely destroyed that. Like, that was part of the mystery. Now Other M's like, oh, no, they made this stupid clone, and then you fought it, and then they froze it, and there it is.
On the other hand of that, you know, I was fine with that, but I do see a lot of people, and even in the Metroid Database Discord, that are just like, it doesn't make any sense that Ridley's on SR388, blah, blah, blah. Why is he here in reference to Samus Returns? So at least, like, maybe for those people, they can just be like, oh, okay, well, that's why Ridley's here, and this makes a little bit more sense. I don't disagree, actually. I was totally fine with Ridley just showing up. It was kind of shocking, because
you're supposed to be dead. That's what I'm saying. It was a storytelling, like, it was part of the story. Like, that's, it added to the whole, like, it immediately, like, not immediately, because you kind of you see that later, but like, when you see him, you're already kind of being suspicious of the Federation at that point in the game. That continues to add onto the pile. You're like, wow, like, how is Ridley even here? Why do they have him? How are they able to even get him? By having it entirely explained, that it deflates, like, that all of that was work that Fusion did, and like, and how well it worked there. I don't think it completely deflates. I think if you still play Fusion, it's fine. But like, it just, I don't think those things necessarily have to be explained. And when you explain it, it kind of, just like you explain how Ridley becomes Ridley. Not that I think it necessarily takes away from, but it kind of does in Other M. It kind of does take away that gravity of like, what is Ridley? Well, oh, well, he's just like this Pokemon that turns like into a dragon or whatever from like a little bird. And you know, like, it loses like the air to it, the mystery, the mystique, like the stuff you don't know is interesting to me, and especially in like Metroid and a sci-fi series where, you know, horror and mystery and the unknown is a big part of each game, you know? So to like have things kind of explained and your hand held for, in my opinion, no reason in this instance. Not necessarily saying that like everything doesn't need to be explained. Some things do need to be explained, but I think that one thing didn't need to be explained. And if it was going to be explained, obviously how Other M did it was dog doo doo. But yeah,
you know what? I'm okay with that little tidbit. To me, it doesn't ruin Ridley being on the BSL. It's just like, okay, well, like, now we know how he got here, and now we know that the Federation was definitely conducting some shady
business. I think that makes the
story
overall not as good, but you know, it is what it is, I guess. But can we move on to the better Ridley clone, the better Ridley doppelganger? I think. Because I think we should start moving into the main...
I mean, basically,
we're already there.
The
doppelganger
right
antagonist. But I love Ridley X. Ridley X is great, like I said earlier. I love how, like, exaggerated Ridley is and the mystery of how he got on... Because let's just... This is how I live my life, Andy. Other M doesn't exist, okay? So it's bliss, okay? So I just played Super Metroid. Killed Ridley. He's dead. Boom, boom, boom. Done. I assume he's, you know, I'm pretty sure he's dead. I get to this other ship, right? The BSL, I'm on playing Fusion. Oh my God, Ridley's here. Whoa, how did he get here? That's the mystery, the shock. I am suspicious. You get to fight him and you get this enclosed claustrophobic fight against him. You know, there's no lava. There's no, weird stuff in the background. Just you're in a steel, like dirty room with Ridley fighting this like, a reanimated corpse, again, reanimated, like, another trope that Metroid loves to use, which I think works well, and you're fighting this, like, zombie Ridley that's, like, has this, like, exaggerated head and these huge claws and this, like, tiny wings and this crazy screech, And I loved it. I love Ridley X. I love how they executed it. And also, he's not a huge... I mean, he's really not a big part of Fusion at all. But I think the role he plays is great. And he's used very well. And I'm like, Ridley, 10 out of 10. Great performance. Loved it, buddy. Yeah, I love Ridley X.
You know, we've talked about the Ridley X fight before, which I think is kind of lacking. But yeah. I will say that I do like Ridley's appearance a lot in Infusion, and I like it just because it kind of subverts your expectations, because the first time you see him, it's in, like, that cold room, mm-hmm. and then, like, he just, like, dies. Like, he just shrivels, his bones fall to the ground. It's just like, mm-hmm. oh, okay. Which I think is, like, very, very interesting, because, like, even considering when Fusion came out at the same time as Prime, and Prime has been building this guy up, building him up all game long for that epic showdown, and here it's just like, he's already dead. Like, this is weird. So I do love that.
Yeah, I love that.
And then I love that he came back as well. And it was like, it kind of played into how, again, Fusion was leaning into the horror elements mm-hmm. a lot more than a lot of the other games. But I thought that his appearance, while brief, was good. He kind of has that deformed, particularly in his jaw.
Yeah.
His jaw's a lot more rounded. It almost looks like a T-Rex jaw. Mm-hmm. Which is weird, because, like, supposedly his clone in Other M, he has, like, this duckbill jaw, so it is funny how that works. But, yeah, I loved his appearance in here. I thought that it added a lot to kind of the intrigue about what was going on the ship and, like, who was really pulling all the strings. So he wasn't, like, he wasn't integral to the story, but it was a good way to get the main story across a lot more. So this one might actually be one of my favorite, instances of Metroid using this trope, but probably not as much as the other thing that Fusion does. Let's move on to the big two that everybody wants to talk about when we're talking about clones and doppelgangers in the Metroid series. And let's talk about the SAX.
Yes.
And, man.
I love the SAX, dude.
I think that the SAX is absolutely fantastic and hands down, not even probably, it's hands down the scariest enemy in the Metroid series, because you are powerless against it. There is nothing you can do for like 95% of this game to even harm the SAX. The only thing that you can do is run for your life.
Dude, I remember the first time you at the beginning playing Fusion, and the first like cutscene where like the SAX blasts through the wall and walks over the elevator platform and like and turns towards the camera and zooms in. That like everyone knows that shot, man. That like just hits you right in your bones. That like that scared me, and like the shrill like music effect that plays like with it, that scared me as a kid. And of course the classic legendary chase sequence, right? Where, all you can do is freeze her, and you're, like, frantically running through these corridors, shooting at these missile doors, trying to freeze her, and then, like, hiding in the ceiling to get away from her. The SAX was so cool, and the great thing about the SAX, like, there's such, like, minimal effort is needed to, like, establish how strong this character is, because we already know how strong full-powered Samus is, right? So we already know what the stakes are, already know what we're up against, because we've played Super Metroid, we've played, you know, these games, we played Smash, we know what fully-powered end-of-game Samus is capable of, right? So we don't need any establishing, we don't need any exposition to know how strong this character is, which I think is just really great. I love that about the SAX, and has that obviously like that non-existent stare, like dead look in its eyes. It's like a ghost of your former self. I absolutely love the SAX, and it's one of my favorite villains, not just in the Metroid series, but like in video games.
Three things that I want to say about the SAX that I always really loved. First is so underrated, but like when you hear the SAX's footsteps and it's dead quiet and it's just like, that is like fantastic. It creates such a mood. It's so creepy. I always remember just hiding and being like, please dear God, don't see me. So I always love that about the SAX. I love that the SAX is like, you know, it's a copy of Samus, and therefore it kind of has Samus's innate desire to hunt down the Metroids, coupled with the X's desire to hunt down the Metroids. So it's like this ultimate killing Metroid machine. And I love that. I love that it like basically stops fighting you at a certain point to eradicate all of these different Metroids. Mm-hmm. So I really love that. But the thing that always stuck out to me about the SAX is like, do you remember at one point in the game, I think you've just found a secret research facility. You're talking to Adam, and he just says, like, he's like, yeah, there's about 10 SAXs on this ship. I was just like, oh my god. I will never forget the first time that he said that, because I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna have to fight an army of these things. I can't even fight against one. So that was such a cool moment. I loved the characterization of the SAX as just like such a threat. I think that this is probably my favorite instance of cloning in the Metroid series.
Yeah, and that's a great moment you bring up, where like Adam says like the 10 SAX, because then right after he's pretty much like, all right, well, we gotta destroy this place. We gotta blow it up. And you don't need any convincing. You're like, yep, I'm with you. 10 SAX on this place. How quick can we get there? You know, so like again, like it's so easy to set up the stakes and you know what needs to be done, because you know how powerful this thing is. I wish that you could have taken on like the 10 of them, like having them like maybe like hunt you down throughout the lab, maybe taking on two at once. That would have been crazy. Maybe for a Metroid Fusion remake, make that happen.
Maybe. You know, I've got kind of a weird anecdote though. I do like. I'll just go straight into my example. I like that they made the SAX like all powerful and they didn't dilute SAX. So like in Alien, for example, in the first Alien, the Xenomorph is like all powerful, right? And like it's such a threat. But then you go into Aliens, like the sequel, and Ripley is just like destroying aliens left and right, and like she's fighting the Queen and stuff. So like the individual Xenomorphs kind of lost their threat, I feel, in the sequel. So I'm glad that Fusion didn't do the same kind of thing where like you're just all of a sudden you're cheesing like SAX is left and right.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. Yeah, I agree with that the SAX was kind of still like, even though it wasn't really the final boss of the game technically, it was, right? Like, you know, that's what it's all leading up to, like when you finally have like, that's really the whole game is like, all right, you're building up to being at the same power level as the SAX so you can fight yourself. That's really the game. So when you finally hit that level and you're like, all right, it's on. Yeah, I love that. The SAX never really feels like it's not a threat until it's dead, right? Even at its last moments when it turns into the huge, like, desperation mode monster where, you know, the boss fight arguably becomes a little easier, but it's like, it's desperately trying to stay alive. It's going full monster mode. I love that part too. And like you can, and it looks so crazy too. It has like that visor face and the arm cannons like sticking out of its like grotesque, like massive, like an arm and shoulder. I love the monster design of its final form. Yeah, the SX like only really felt like, even when you were getting closer and closer to being as strong as it still felt like a huge threat and never felt like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, max out everything and just run through and cheese it out. Though you can still cheese it out in terms of like its fight pattern, but like lore wise and in terms of how you enter the fight, it's still a pretty high stakes scenario. So yeah, I love how they treated the character throughout the entirety of the game.
You know, if those rumors of a new 2D Metroid were true and we got a remake of Fusion, I wouldn't be upset. I'm just saying.
Oh, I would not. I would love that.
I think that it is a triumph of the Metroid series that they managed to make not one, but two clones of Samus and have them completely different and completely unique. So let's talk about Dark Samus, the most famous of the clones in the series. Of course, this is actually Metroid Prime, and you don't really see Dark Samus, you know, come into her own until Metroid Prime 2, and you have a series of awesome boss battles against her in that game, and she looks like more and more creepy and like kind of starts to look like the final form of Metroid Prime by the end of the game. I really love that. I love her characterization and her presentation in there. I love that she is like a little bit more acrobatic than regular Samus, and just that in Corruption she really leans into like the Phazon powers that she has. I think that they did a really great job creating a antagonist for Samus. I don't think that she feels as scary as SAX does, but she feels perhaps more formidable and more powerful, particularly in Corruption when you are in that suit that's slowly killing you and you know that Dark Samus can overwhelm you at any point when you're on the planet phase. So I think that they did a really good job with Dark Samus. Maybe not as memorable to me as SAX, but
really, Dark Samus is so memorable to me. I think even
maybe memorable isn't the right word, because I mean they're both memorable. They're both fantastic. I just like SAX was just so scary and so like, you know, you were just so helpless against it. And the fact that I think maybe what I'm trying to say is like, Dark Samus was a great foil, but at the end of the day, I think you fight Dark Samus 4 times and you beat her 4 times. So she doesn't have that same kind of thing where it's like, I can't beat you, because you beat Dark Samus all the time, if that makes sense. So both again, but like both are completely different. They're presented differently. So, and I think that they're both extremely effective in how they are presented. So, you know, I love Dark Samus. I think that she's fantastic, but, I think, you know, gun to my head, I might take SAX over Dark Samus.
I mean, I might too, but I think they kind of feel like they're both really great in different ways for me. Like, I love how Dark Samus is like the major driving antagonistic force over 2 games. Cause, you know, I mean, yeah. Well, if you really want to count, you know, the Metroid Prime version of Dark Samus too, like, yeah, the fact that Metroid Prime itself is like the main driving antagonistic force over 3 games, I think is so great, and how it goes full circle with her appearance at the end. They hit different like spots, right? Like the SAX is kind of this like really like existential dread kind of antagonist, right? Where it's like an infection. It's not something that like is evil, right? Like it exists to feed and, you know, continue to like thrive on life forms and prosper and reproduce and all that kind of stuff. Right. Whereas like Dark Samus is like, you could argue is a little more of like an evil force, even though Phazon is like a natural organic kind of thing in a way. It corrupted things. It had like a bit of a more of an evilish agenda, even though then I don't even know if I would describe Dark Samus as necessarily evil in that way, but the different kinds of like antagonistic force they are make them separate them a lot to me. I just love how like Dark Samus like is like leading like a corrupted army at one point, like seems to have these kind of like a vision, right? Like it seems to have this kind of like conscious like forethought and planning, and has something in its like head to do something, right? And whereas the SAX is just like essentially a bug that is just going to, you know, feed and reproduce ad nauseum till it dies or something kills it, right? Two very different but still really awesome and crazy things. But the fact that Dark Samus is like a multi-game kind of antagonist while still being, you know, like a clone of you know, right? Like Metroid, now that we've really talked about it for the past, you know, 47 minutes or so, that, you know, Metroid does this trope, I think, really well overall compared to most properties. Like when you think of overused tropes in Metroid, the doppelganger like clone trope is almost, I can't think of a time that's ever been the one named, you know. I've never stopped as a Metroid fan and thought there are too many clones or too many doppelgangers in Metroid. That being said, if they added more, maybe would it cross the limit, cross the line? Maybe it would. But I think looking back at this, looking at like Ridley X, Dark Samus, SAX, I think it's done really well. And I think, you know, Dark Samus wise, the fact that this character, like this clone of Samus got like this pretty solid character development over multiple games, right? And like we see the origin of the character, the full demise of the character, I think is really impressive and really well done, and obviously has resonated with people because, you know, it's I think a big part of why Metroid Prime was successful. It had a really solid antagonist, a really good story, as well as being really good gameplay and all of that, and immersive and all of what we know and love about Metroid Prime. But, you know, Dark Samus being included in Smash and all these other things too lead to, I think, Dark Samus being a pretty good idea and pretty awesome too. But I love them both, and I might take SAX as well because I love the SAX. And I feel like I was gonna ask Dark Samus or SAX, but I feel like we're both on the same side of that boat.
I feel like I was maybe a little like, I love Dark Samus too.
It's hard to really pick. They're both Dark great.
Samus. I do love, you know, I was kind of saying that she doesn't feel as threatening because you fight her so often.
Yeah.
But I actually think that that's fine, because I think all 3 of those fights in Echoes are like really awesome fights, and her theme music is wicked as well.
Yeah.
And actually that's a crime that's not in Smash, because that definitely should be.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's not just like, oh yeah, Sam, it's not like Dark Samus like a jobber, you know, like throwing down like dark matches like to the champ, you know, on easy squashes, right? Like those are hard fights, those are big boss battles. Right, you might beat her a few times. I mean, you beat Ridley a bunch of times, but I still think when you come in to fight him, like, all right, yeah, let's do this. Which again, another,
I do like that they kind of did in Corruption what they did with SAX in Fusion, where it's like you've built up the entire game basically around that confrontation, and I actually love that she like basically came in and whooped ass in like Norian and destroyed every single hunter, like basically with the snap of a finger. So I do like, I kind of like them. I like her presentation in both games. I do love that there was like an arc for the Metroid Prime games. I think that that's a really underrated reason why they were so successful, is because you had like this story arc that started and culminated and finished, and you know, that's actually something that Metroid does really well in general as well. Speaking of another, you know, underrated thing, is just how it kind of has like mini game arcs almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that Dark Samus was really awesome in this game. Very, very different enemies, and again, it's like it's a very it's a big testament to the series that they have literally two clones of Samus, and they are completely distinct with their own personalities, their own, you know, their own quirks, and both of them feel, you know, both of them feel awesome, and it doesn't feel like, you know, they've done it or they've gone to the well too much, even though, you know, at the end of the day, you have two clones of Samus. So I think that that's a really good achievement of Nintendo with Metroid.
Absolutely agree. And while we're still on the note of Dark Samus, I will say that I'm a big fan of the Prime 2 Dark Samus. I love the like the phase in kind of breaking through the skin with like the fingers and the toes and all that.
Yeah.
The Corruption Prime the Prime 3 Corruption Dark Samus also looks really cool, but it is like a little more streamlined looking. Which I think makes sense story wise, right? Like she's had more time to like get more power and like coalesce and form her energy and all that, so I think that makes more sense. But I love the Prime 2 Dark Samus, just looks so badass. That being said, the Smash Ultimate Dark Samus, which is kind of like a combination of the two, which is what Smash I think does really well, has these like composite looks for some of these characters who've had multiple forms or looks, kind of brings and meshes them together. I love the Dark Samus look in Ultimate as well. But yeah, like I miss the Prime 2 toes and the arm pads or the shoulder pads, but yeah, great characters, love them. And I'm glad we were able to talk about them today.
Okay. So we kind of ended on a question that we are going to answer, and then we put it out to everybody as well. But, you know, obviously Metroid has done this trope very successfully. So naturally, the question to end on here is, would we like to see another clone slash doppelganger slash antagonist like that, or do we think that it's probably time to retire this? My answer is, in terms of Samus, it's probably time to walk away from having another kind of Samus-esque like villain, if you will.
Yeah.
We were just, like, even last week when we were talking about Federation Force, I think that the final battle, even though you're battling Samus as a big ball, even that is just kind of like, okay, well, like, you know, we're fighting Samus kind of again, or like she's being mind controlled. So like, you, I mean, you're basically, you're fighting like a dark Samus, right? Mm-hmm. Or like an evil Samus. So I was like, you know, this one doesn't exactly work for me. So I think that I wouldn't be opposed to like seeing more, like if they were just like, here's Kraid and we cloned him and that's why we brought him back to life and that's what he's doing in Metroid Prime 4, I'd be like, yep, okay, cool. If there was another, like if Dark Samus were to come back specifically in another game, I'd be like, I don't think so. I don't, you had a good ending, you had a good story, I'm fine with you like staying dead. I think I'm okay walking away from that. But I'm, you know, as in the series in general in terms of clones, I'd be down to see just some like more general, I'd be down to see that trope being done again, but just not with Samus.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I don't think the trope is necessarily something that needs to be avoided forever. It clearly can be done well. I don't think the next antagonist should be a clone of anything, probably. Though I still have a soft spot for the X and wouldn't mind seeing the SAX again, or the X, but I have no idea what direction they'll go in terms of the X with a fusion sequel, if it ever happens. But yeah, I think if we're going to see the doppelganger thing again, let's not have it be Samus. Maybe somebody else. I'm down for Ridley clones that don't suck. More Ridley clones are totally cool. Let's get a Kraid clone, Crocomile clone.
And you know who we didn't even talk about at all was MB, who's like kind of a clone.
Yeah, but not really a doppelganger though. Like you wouldn't of them. Yeah, so I don't know if it's the same thing.
Well, you know what? We'll save talking about MB what game is that from? For other
what game is that from?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard of that one, but I wanted to quickly shout out though because you mentioned Samus and Ballform and Federation Force. Someone, Griffin on Twitter, off that tweet that he posted from the episode mentioned that apparently the civilization from that planet in Federation Force worshipped this thing called the Orb that was created by the amplification beam, and that's why possibly that Samus is fought in Ballform. Because of that, so I don't know. Thanks to Griffin, though, for that extra Federation Force lore. And speaking of which, I think I wanted to quickly go through the tweets we got, because we asked on Twitter, what do we think of the use of the doppelganger trope in the Metroid series? And a bunch of people tweeted in response to that, so I figured we'd just quickly, to round out the episode, go through their tweets and quickly respond and give our thoughts.
Yep, let's hit it. The first one, speaking of, is from Griffin. He says, I really like it. It's not very often that an evil doppelganger, easy for me to say, is the main antagonist, let alone the big bad of an amazing trilogy.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Right with you there,
man. All right. So C. McClellan says, I prefer the SAX as well. Both serve their purpose. Hope we see new threats in Prime 4 and not a retread of the old ground. So kind of like what we were saying, we want to see something new and not necessarily clones. McTroyd agrees. He says, I love it. Both Dark Samus and the SAX have been straight up pure evil. And we're actually
huge threats to Samus. See, that's what I was thinking. I was talking about earlier is that, like, when I think of, like, Dark Samus, I think of, like, yeah, Dark Samus is kind of evil, right? Like, it's not just, like, a natural kind of predator thing. But the SAX, I don't know if I would call the SAX evil. And I think that's part of why it's scary. It's not evil. It's like an organism, right? It's just an alien.
You know what it almost is? It's like a force of nature. It's
exactly.
A destructive hurricane coming towards you.
Exactly.
So like, that's what I love about that's cool.
So good comment.
Crimson Paladin basically echoed what we just said. It's really impressive that the franchise managed to pull it off twice while having them feel distinct from each other. I just hope it stops there. Dom agrees. Pretty cool, but if they bring it back again, it might be overkill.
Yeah. So I think that's a consensus.
Seems like, Yeah, it seems like that's a consensus that we're kind of okay with this trope for now. One last one here from Kirby Star. I do like the fact that Dark Samus isn't just Samus's darker side or whatever, but a Phazon-hungry entity that just happens to look like Samus and therefore rival Samus in that regard. Same goes for the SAX, who's just a soulless copy, hungry for power. Oof.
Yeah, I 100% agree. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, the SAX, it doesn't have necessarily that kind of evil quality. It's like it's hungry for a certain thing that it was like built to need, right? The SAX is kind of, you know, hungry for organic matter, hungry for knowledge that these organisms have and all of that. I love that. I think just making something be bad because it's evil is not necessarily lazy, but it's, you know, it leaves a little room for depth. And because it's sci-fi, I think having that science part to it, right, in the fiction of like, okay, this isn't an evil spirit or a bad guy, right? It's an alien that is hunting you because that's what it does. It's a predator, or you know, it craves this thing that exists in nature, which I really love. So yeah, I think everyone is on consensus here that like, yep, it's been good, we've enjoyed it so far. Let's keep it that way. Let's do something new. And I think for every Metroid fan, new might not always be welcome, but I'm down for new stuff if it's done well. And I think in this case, it's been done well a lot, but I'm down for something new that could be done well. And it seems like everyone agrees, but I got to go back to Griffin's comment. Yeah, the staying power of an antagonist over multiple games, I think, is definitely something to note. And it's great and a big part of why we love that character and all the other ones that we've mentioned on this episode.
You know what I think is noteworthy is we put out the tweet that just generally asked what we think of the doppelganger trope in the Metroid series, and nobody said anything about Little Birdie.
No one.
Crickets.
No, absolutely not, dude. Yeah. Oh, by the way, and another tweet just before we go. Actually, I saw Laurel actually tweeted us a full list of like a bunch of developers for Metroid Prime 4. And mentioned a bunch of other games like Crysis and Donkey Kong. They're all, and Shadow of the Tomb Raider and Battlefield Hard. Yo, Metroid Prime 4 is going to be sick. But I know that game is probably not going to have a doppelganger. What if Dark Samus showed up again? How could Dark Samus show up if there's no Phazon? I think we'll be okay in doppelgangers on that. But yeah, a lot of good comments on this. A lot of people seem to like the doppelganger trope, and it seems like we like it too. Except no more fake Kraids, which I was surprised, dude. I thought you were going to be team fake Kraid. I thought you were going
to
be here.
You know what? I was waiting, too, because as soon as I saw that, I was like, I bet you he thinks I'm going to love fake Kraid. But I don't. So I'm going to surprise Dak today.
I thought you were going to have, like, a fake Kraid shirt. Like, a whole, like we need him, like, to be in more games. Like, we need him to
No, we need Kraid to be in more games.
What if fake Kraid was put in Smash and not the real Kraid? Just the mini Kraid?
You know what? Real Kraid might be too big for Smash, but you know what? They said that about Ridley, and
yeah,
there he is. All right, let's wrap it up and get on out of here. Dak, thank you for putting this together today. This is a nice little topic to talk about, and you know, hopefully it's not long before we have more Metroid news. But for now, that's going to do it for us. We want you to check us out over on Twitter at Omega Metroid Pod, and individually also on Twitter at Spiteri316 and at the Rapture _. Of course, we also want you to check us out over on Podbean, Spotify, iTunes, you know the drill, wherever you get your podcasts. Like and subscribe to the Omega Metroid Podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review. That would be really cool. And recommend us to that Metroid fan in your life and tell them where they can get their Metroid fix. That's going to do it for us. Until next week, guys, we will see you then.